Hello, my name is Andy Miller, and I'm the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary based in Ridgeland, Mississippi. We are developing trusted leaders for faithful churches, and we do that based in the authority of Scripture and in the reality that Christians can be transformed. We do that also through bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees. We'd love for you to learn more about Wesley Biblical Seminary at wbs.edu, where we're developing trusted leaders for faithful churches.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues. That's the name of this here show on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Wednesday, February the 5th, 2025, so January's gone. Thank goodness. Well, I don't like January myself because of the cold.
I wonder why.
Yeah, because of the cold weather. I just need to stop complaining about that and just enjoy every minute and every hour and every month that God gives me.
And you live in
that. That needs to be my attitude.
Yeah, you do that. I look forward to seeing that change.
And remember, you're in Mississippi, so it changes, and you get plenty of warm weather. 81 Saturday here.
That's right.
In February.
Introduce the panel here.
Yes, I will. I'll introduce the meteorologist, Wesley Wildman. You just heard there. And
I got some thoughts I want to share before we get started, but go ahead and finish up.
We want you to share. That's why we do this show, so you can share. Yeah. We'll do that momentarily.
If it's that important, don't even introduce me. Just get right to it.
Do you have a word?
No, I don't have a word.
Okay. I wasn't going to say a word from the Lord.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then in that case,
I don't know what you're going to say. let me introduce Ed Vitagliano. You guys jumped in on me before I had a chance.
We did. We jumped.
Ed Vitagliano, who just jumped.
Like a spider on a cricket.
She didn't slap me with a terror. That's all I got to say. Okay. Ed Wesley, this is a professional program, people.
Yes.
It only gets better. I'm Tim Wildman with our newsman, Christopher Woodward.
Good morning,
Chris.
In defense of meteorologist Wesley,
yeah.
I have to say that 1 in 3 of today's on-air broadcast meteorologists are graduates of our Mississippi State University. So
hey,
representing.
There you go.
What now?
Yes, 1 in 3 people today on air doing meteorology are graduates of MSU.
In the United States?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, absolutely.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either,
it's
Chris.
It's from Mississippi State. Trust me,
where
I'm a
are you getting
man.
This information?
It's Mississippi State has promoted this before.
Okay, well, I don't understand why 1 out of 3 5-star quarterbacks can't be from Mississippi State.
Well,
that's
what I understand. You can't be graded everything.
What good does meteorologists
do? We're the Alabama of meteorology.
So is that a serious statistic?
Oh,
1 out of 3 meteorologists, on-air meteorologists, mm-hmm. is a Mississippi State graduate?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm stunned by that.
Way to go, by the way. More cowbell.
All right.
All right. So,
well,
Wesley's
you know, we don't have time to investigate that. We just got to
know. It's really true. I'll post it on our Facebook page.
All right, Wesley, what did you want to share?
I am not getting tired of winning, as Trump mentioned in 2016.
Yeah.
But am I having a hard time keeping up with winning?
Yes.
And there's a lot of winning going on.
There is. President Trump is wheeling and dealing.
Well, and I just want to announce
around
here
the globe
on the program. Now, our listeners understand that of our 160-something radio stations, we're headquartered. Our flagship station is here in Tupelo, Mississippi. I just wanted to announce that Tupelo is taking over Columbus, Mississippi. And we're going to turn it into the Sandals of Sandals Resort.
Of the Tom Bigby?
Of the Tom Bigby. We're just taking
Tom
it
Bigby
over.
Tom Bigby River, for those who don't know. You guys are mocking, but, you're playfully having fun.
We're having fun with
President Trump's.
I'm enjoying the chaotic move in the right direction.
Yeah.
But it's both. We are moving in the right direction, but man, is it chaos.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, so much to talk about today with, every day there's so much to talk about with respect to what President Trump and his administration and what they're doing.
It hasn't been a full month.
Do what?
It hadn't even been a month yet.
True.
And just every day is some, 3 or 4 things that you just stand up and cheer.
Yeah.
you know, you just stand up and cheer. At least we do, because they're great for our country. And President Trump, again, continues to move at breakneck speed. So yesterday, Chris, mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C., what was the lead story?
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu came to the White House late yesterday afternoon for a meet and greet with his friend and counterpart President Donald Trump. They talked about a number of issues, and people have talked a lot about what they had to say. One of the issues that has been trending since about 6 o'clock last night was President Trump saying, "We will take over Gaza. We will help rebuild Gaza." He said it in different ways. A lot of people are focusing on the word, quote, "take over Gaza." Not everybody's a fan of that idea, but here is some audio from President Trump talking about taking over Gaza and some other things. Clip one.
"We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area."
So he said, "We'll own it," if you didn't catch that at the beginning of the podcast.
Okay. This is an amazing outside-the-box plan that, as I told somebody, outside the tinderbox thinking that is going on here with President Trump. Sometimes with President Trump, he says such outlandish things that you just go, you know, what in the world is he talking about? What is he thinking about? But, and when I first heard this, I was going, wow, that's, is he joking or is he serious? And upon further contemplation about what President Trump said here, I think he's onto something. Okay, I'm not gonna. What we're talking about is the Gaza Strip. That's the Gaza Strip is a strip of land on the Mediterranean Sea, beautiful beaches, just beautiful beaches, that the Israeli government basically gave to the Palestinians, the Arabs who wanted to live there and govern themselves. But I don't know how many people are there, a million, 2 million, something like that. But because of what happened on October the, was it the 7th?
7th.
2023, when Hamas, based in Gaza, decided to butcher 1,100 Israelis, including some Americans, just brutally murdered them on that bloody day. Ever since then, Israel has just been leveling buildings and infrastructure and tunnels, and they're going after Hamas with a vengeance. And there's been a lot of collateral damage. There's been a lot of people die in Gaza. It's just, it's horrible now. And the people of Gaza are not going to be able to rebuild it. Okay, it's leveled for miles and miles and miles and miles. These people don't have the money to rebuild that Gaza. Plus, so what President Trump is suggesting or recommending or advocating, I don't know what word you would use exactly, is that, this is the way I understood it, guys. Do you got any more audio that he mentions on this?
Not on this specific issue.
Is that the Arab countries in and around Israel, namely Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. Those are the ones I mentioned. I think President Trump mentioned Egypt and Jordan. Take in these their fellow Arabs, the Palestinians, and incorporate them into their countries. Mm-hmm. And then the Americans take over that strip of land called Gaza, and I guess spend 10 to 20 years, and this is very forward-thinking, futuristic, cleaning it up and then turning it into a resort area along the Mediterranean Sea and bringing peace to the region. that's not been there before. That's basically what President Trump, that's his vision.
Yeah, and I did look it up. There are 2 million people. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many, because of the war, they may be scattered somewhat, but the population of the Gaza Strip was 2 million. Gaza City was about 600,000. In terms of my own opinion, let me just kind of lay this out. You know, like when you do pros and cons, you know, about going, hey, let's go on a vacation here, or let's buy this, or let's do that. Okay, so let me do the cons first. In terms of
this proposal. Gotcha.
Okay. First of all, the Trump agenda has always been focused on cutting government spending. This is going to be tremendously expensive. Second of all, I'm not sure that once it is rebuilt, how do you keep Hamas from moving back in? Maybe that's what President Trump meant by
"we my first thought.
Will own it." Third, I would say this is going to sound a little bit ugly, but I don't know the average Arab man on the street how much they care about being an entrepreneurial kind of, you know, mindset, because they're going to have to run it afterwards. Those are kind of the cons.
Let me add one to that, though.
Okay.
And also, it does run up against America First idea, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So, on the pro side, I agree with you, Tim. I would never have dreamt of this idea. So, you pull this off, and to me, that's Pulitzer Prize winning idea. If you can pull this off, President Trump, I'm talking about. Second of all, you could, in making this almost outlandish suggestion, use it as kind of a way to bargain with Saudi Arabia and maybe one or two other Arab nations and say, all right, fine, you don't want the United States, quote unquote, owning it. You pitch in. Let's make this a regional enterprise. I think personally what President Trump meant by we'll own it is we'll take responsibility.
Yes, that's what he meant.
I don't think he meant we're going to plant the American flag.
Right. 52nd state.
Yes, 52nd state. So on the pro side, it would also perhaps undercut groups like Hamas. If you had a profitable enterprise in the Gaza Strip where they are prospering, then other Palestinians, quote unquote, other Arabs, for example, in the West Bank and, you know, the Palestinian territories may say, you know what, we want that too. And because the only way really to undercut the ideology of Hamas and Hezbollah is to prosper those people. But then I come back to the con side of it. We kind of tried that in Iraq. You know, we're gonna airlift democracy and capitalism into another area in the Middle East, and it didn't work too well. So
Afghanistan's a good example.
Afghanistan.
I just turned 43. We were in Afghanistan for half my lifetime, and we have nothing to show for it.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
And Afghanistan is a perfect example of the fact. Now, there were some Afghans that wanted to go to college. They wanted to live Western lives. Mm-hmm. But guess what? The tribal leaders wouldn't let them. Eventually, the Taliban took over and reinstituted Sharia. So I don't know. This, to me, could be one of the greatest things we've seen in 200 years, or it could be just another failed experiment in the Middle East. I don't know. Wesley, what do you think?
I'm looking at Brent Scher from Daily Wire. He posted a picture of what, I guess, his mock-up of what that would look like, and it's y'all can look right here. That looks beautiful.
It would be. There are some Arab cities that are just gorgeous in the Middle East.
Oh, they got the money.
Yeah.
I mean, the oil money. You've seen Dubai?
Right. Dubai is what I was thinking about.
Oh, well, they could turn it into a Dubai of the Mediterranean. Now, I just don't know how this suggestion by President Trump is going to work out. He suggested they change the Mediterranean Sea to the Trump Sea. The name of it, And I don't know.
That's probably a bridge too far.
I think it's going to fly.
Gulf of Trump.
Gulf of Trump.
Gulf of Trump, the Trump
Persian
Sea.
Gulf. Oh, now.
Well, listen, here's why I disagree that this is like nation building like Iraq and Afghanistan, although I understand how the comparison could be made, what you guys are bringing up, which is not America first.
Right.
Getting involved in countries around the world and trying to impose our will or
our ideas,
bring democracy to a place that they've never had it before, that kind of thing. I think with respect to the Gaza Strip, which is owned by Israel,
right?
It isn't owned by Israel gave it to the Palestinian people.
Well, then they need to take it back at this point.
Well, that's what Trump's talking about.
Yeah.
Basically, working with Israel, taking that piece of land and turn it into something special and profitable and an international resort and tourist destination. That's what he's talking about. Now, whether that can ever happen, everything starts with a vision, with a dream. But yeah. Here's what I would say is, what do you got to lose? Nothing else seemingly has worked. And if you're the... you're the people there in Gaza, and you can move to Egypt or Jordan or Saudi Arabia and have a new life and somewhere to start. Again, have you seen pictures of the aerial shots from Gaza?
It's destroyed.
It's destroyed, and these people are poor.
Yeah,
they don't. They're going to be living like Mel Gibson in. What was that movie?
Mad Max.
They're going to be living like Mad Max over there for the foreseeable future, and that's going to only foster more hatred and more terrorism. Mm-hmm. So I would say that what President Trump is, if he can get them resettled to somewhere else besides that land, get them out of that land. Now they're going to say this is our land.
Yeah.
Too, and listen, you're never going to resolve the feelings between the Jews and the Arabs about whose land it is altogether. Now, there are a lot of Jews and Arabs, the vast majority of them, in Israel that live in peace with one another.
Yeah.
Okay? They live in peace with one another. Now, they don't necessarily hang out all the time, but they live in peace with one another, Arabs and Jews. But you got the people down in Gaza, basically, who support Hamas, and Hamas is an internationally recognized terrorist organization and has been for decades. They live and breathe hate Jews, hate. Well, they basically hate the Jews and want to drive them into the sea, and that's what they get up to do every day. And I don't know how you get rid of that. Well, I know how you get rid of it. You kill it, that ideology. You try to kill it, and so if you can't, you move it out. You use brute force if you have to. So I think that's what President Trump is trying to set a vision, if you will. So I don't see it as nation building per se. I see it as a way to bring peace and stability. If the Americans basically, and I don't see it all as government money, although there would be government money, U.S. federal tax law. I've seen it too more as, okay, can you get other countries to buy into this vision, private businesses buy into this vision. You know what I'm saying? It's just thinking outside the box. But you're talking about 10 years of just cleaning up the place, and that's with all kind of heavy machinery, and then I don't know what you do with the people. You got to get the people play, the 2 million people, you got to get them housed somewhere, in the world.
If Trump can pull it off, it would be extraordinary. I mean, it would be something for the history books. Mm-hmm. I mean,
we'd be reading about it. They'll be reading about it, 500 years from now in your history books.
If the Lord tarries.
Yes, if the Lord tarries.
What if the Lord doesn't tarry?
Then
you won't be.
Then we don't care.
Yeah. We'll be singing victory in Jesus.
We'll be in heaven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
we won't care. We don't care about anything in heaven.
Because we should. What I'm saying is, if the Lord comes back.
Yes. Chris threw this in
then,
there.
Then yeah. time Thank Chris on, for the on Terry. Earth, there's not enough time left to rebuild Gaza.
We don't use Terry enough. Or Stowe, as President Wildman once told me.
Guys, we've got to get to the winning. Okay,
Wesley.
Pam Bondi.
Lay it out.
I'll give you one.
Give us the wins since yesterday.
Pam Bondi,
the new Attorney General.
All right, she was confirmed. That was a win.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any audio on that?
We do not, but I can tell you one surprising angle to her confirmation. One Democrat voted for her, and that was Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman.
Oh, yeah.
One Democrat that voted
John Hoodie Fetterman.
She was passed 54 to 46.
He strikes me as a fair-minded Democrat. He's still a left.
Blue collar, the old school.
Old school. Well, you know, when Republicans vote for these kinds of nominations, it's usually 15-0. Now, the Republicans say, all right, well, that's what we wanted, you know, to nominate, so we're voting.
Yep.
And that's what Fetterman strikes me as, that kind of person.
And then, I can move on. I got another one.
No, that was a win.
That was a win.
Yes. Pam Bondi's confirmed. Go ahead.
And then another one was when President Trump signed an executive order to audit the USAID and the USA to see where our tax dollars are being spent. And as a result, we uncovered.
Thanks, Elon.
That's right. We uncovered millions and millions of dollars that was being spent on DEI and transgender stuff. I mean, make it worse. On top of all of that.
Those are wins, though, you just paid.
Yes. These are wins because we uncovered how our millions of dollars were being spent toward the LGBT agenda.
Just wasted around the world.
But that's what I was going to say.
Unbelievable.
On the topic itself is wasteful. Furthermore, it was for other countries.
Yes.
Yes.
I do have some sound about this because a group of Democrats, including Elizabeth Warren, Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, they all gathered together to badmouth Elon Musk.
Did they gather together?
They did. They assembled.
Is that better, Dad? Assembled.
They assembled.
They gathered together like a cookout.
They wanted to bash Elon Musk for even daring to say we should cut these federal spending amounts to various countries for all kinds of gibberish. But I've got some reaction to this from Alabama Senator Katie Britt, who says Democrats' priorities are clearly out of line here. Clip 6.
Democrats are out having an actual meltdown, a four-year-old meltdown, not over dollars that they believe should be going to our veterans who have served this country honorably, not for dollars that they believe should be helping a single mom get on their feet, not for dollars that they believe should be securing our border and keeping Americans safe and secure, but they are crying over these dollars.
Now, for people not aware of this story, as Caroline Leavitt outlined outside the White House earlier this week.
Who was that we were just hearing?
That was Alabama Senator Katie Britt.
Okay.
But Caroline Leavitt, the new White House press secretary, told reporters this week that we're spending money on all kinds of things, including like a transgender comic book. We're spending money overseas on LGBTQ operas. All kinds of things that taxpayers who were already taxed way too much are funding overseas.
It was like a comic book in like El Salvador strange. Listen.
I collected that one.
You did? It's collector's item? I'm a collector. Item.
Yeah,
if it's still in the wrapper, you got a lot of money.
I'm a collector of foreign comic books.
You're collecting a comic book
it's
about
kind of an unusual pastime.
I don't know if that joke's going to age well because it had to do with LGBTQ.
Right. Yeah. I just got the LG part.
Okay.
And so, it's
money that has been spent to drive the left-wing radical sex and gender ideology
with
around
no
the world with zero accountability.
And Elon Musk, thank God for Elon Musk. I know there are a lot of people worried about what role he's going to play and is he going to divert President Trump's attention off to something that's away from the America First agenda.
He's actually helped him on to be better on the LGBTQ issue than Trump was in 2016.
Now, USAID is not a government agency, right? They just spend government money.
Yes.
All right. So what's bizarre is that the left is complaining about Elon that he's not elected.
Right.
And now he's. They're defending an organization that's not elected.
You know, and of course, Harris was put in to run for president. She wasn't elected to run for president.
And this is the party to protect democracy.
Yeah, right. A lot of winning.
All right, we're going to take a timeout right here. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed, Wesley, and Chris. We're going to visit with M.D. Perkins when we get back. He just got back recently from California, where his brother lost his house in a fire.
If we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. And now, through a match, your gift is doubled. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Are you getting tired of winning, people? President Trump, I know not everybody listening voted for President Trump, but the vast, vast majority of you did, and you voted for President Trump because you wanted to bring common sense and good government back to our country. Of course, the left screamed, Hitler, fascist,
right,
racist. Well, guess what? That didn't work. A majority of Americans, both the popular vote and the Electoral College, said, we're not buying you're the sky is falling if Trump's elected.
Right.
We're buying that the sky is falling if Harris is elected.
Yes.
But so
or
Trump won.
To fall.
Trump won despite his shortcomings as a politician. Now, don't tell him he has shortcomings, because he doesn't believe that, which is fine.
Yeah.
But he is rocking and rolling as president, and he is stacking up win upon win upon win in terms of what he's been able to do. I am stunned, quite frankly.
I am too.
I mean, it's
shock and awe.
Here's what happened. He evidently, like most leaders, he doesn't know all the details of all these executive orders that he's signing.
Right.
Okay. But they fit in with his ideology of America first, of common sense, and also fighting back against the secular progressive left, which hates our traditions. They hate our country. They hate our religion.
They hate God.
They hate God, these people. And Trump realizes that, and the team around him does. And they're not playing that game that happened in Trump's first administration, where the deep state got the best of him in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He was prepared.
Yes.
He was prepared. He and his team were prepared day one on how to disassemble the deep state secular progressives who want to, who have the terrible intentions for our country. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So everything he's doing now is just win after win after win. These executive orders, for example, I've read a couple of them, and I was up to like 4 a.m. reading one of them the other night. It was very fascinating.
Oh, I'm sure.
Page Turner.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Page Turner.
I got it on chapter 17 of the executive order.
Yeah.
4044, which was.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
-21. Oh, yeah. Have you read it?
Oh, man, yeah. That's awesome.
He is just knocking it out of the park with the winds. He signed an executive order where we send the illegal criminal aliens to if their home country won't take them back, we send them to get to Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
So he's sending the military down to the border. Pete Hegseth is doing a bang up job. It's just Pam Bondi was just, I mean, it's just win after win after win.
Speaking about winning too, yeah. He also, within days of being, confirmed or officially becoming the president, being inaugurated, he also went straight to North Carolina and was concerned about those that, had suffered in the tornado, a hurricane that came through. As a result, he's also been going to California for the wildfires as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, listen.
Trying to give you a head.
That's a good segue. It's called a segue.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Wasn't as clean as I wanted, but
right.
I tried to help.
You got there.
Got there.
Wait, what's so funny?
No. what's so funny?
Am I missing something here?
No. You were going to say something. I don't know. I think what we have
I think here we need to move on.
Is a failure to communicate.
I think we need, yeah, that was from Cool Hand Luke, right? Right.
What we have here
is a failure to communicate.
Failure to communicate.
You mean to mock a Southern accent for you real quick? I can do it.
Major Payne.
He's a native Mississippian. I'm very good at mocking Southern accents.
Major Payne.
You're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. And joining us now is our friend and colleague, M.D. Perkins. He's a producer and director with our American Family Studios. Good morning, M.D.
Good to be with y'all.
M.D., your family was affected by the wildfires out in the Los Angeles area. Tell us about this.
Yeah, my brother and his family ended up losing their house. They live in Pasadena, so there were two kind of major fire events. There was the Pacific Palisades there on the shore of the coast. That got a lot of the news coverage, but further inland, about 30 miles away, there was the Eaton Fire, and that impacted Altadena and Pasadena, kind of there in the east of Los Angeles area. And so, I mean, over 10,000 structures destroyed.
You mean in Pasadena?
In Pasadena itself, yeah.
That's where the Rose Bowl is too, right?
Right,
I mean, this
right.
is that's where they have the Rose Bowl Parade, and this is a very well-known part of
Yeah, it's a historic community. I mean, it's beautiful. It's separate from and it's operated completely under its own jurisdiction. So it's distinct from Los Angeles.
When did this happen?
This happened January 8th.
Now, when did you first learn from your brother? Did he call you, get an email, or did you see it on the news and you said, how did this develop?
Well, in our family group text on that Wednesday night, so the Wednesday of the 7th, there were all of these wind storms that were happening in the area, the Santa Ana winds. And so we were aware that there was a lot of wind damage already occurring in the area, trees down, limbs on houses, things like this. And so my brother was trying to assess the situation there and lock some things down. And then at 6 o'clock that Wednesday evening, or that Tuesday evening rather, there was an alert that there was a fire in the mountains about 3 miles away from Pasadena. And because of the nature of the winds, these were being monitored very closely, because once those winds start picking up, I mean, that wildfire can spread incredibly fast. And so it was by 5:30 in the morning, they were receiving a knock on their door vigorously from their neighbor to get out, because the house across the street was consumed in flames.
Oh my goodness.
What? And, the house across the street?
Yeah.
Were they able to get any of their valuables? I mean, they're like...
They had been monitoring it, so they had already packed up the car expecting to not have to evacuate, but then when they got that in the night, or early in the morning, you know, they were immediately able to, you know, retreat.
So when did they learn their house had burned to the ground?
I mean... It was several hours later. They were getting kind of conflicting reports from some of the neighbors that stuck around, because in their particular neighborhood, this was a spot fire that jumped off from the other main area. So this is just a little bit outside. It wasn't like a huge wall of fire coming through, but the way that the fires were spreading was the embers were getting carried over by the wind, maybe several blocks over, igniting, you know, brush or dead leaves or things in palm trees and things like that. And and kind of igniting and then burning from there. So
some people do have their private security cameras attached to their cell phones.
Yeah.
And so
there were people who had that, and they were
literally watching
things.
Their own house. I thought that's horrible to have to watch your house burn down on your home security system on your cell phone.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of surprised that neighbors stayed.
Yeah.
So, we've heard a lot of stories about there not being enough water for fire departments, first responders to combat fires. Was that the case, like the house across the street? Were the firemen able to combat that fire and just didn't succeed, or were they without water?
As far as I'm aware, in the Pasadena, Altadena area, they weren't dealing with the water shortages that were happening in the Palisades. I wasn't aware of necessarily a lack of water. It was more just that the fires were moving so quickly that they weren't able to address them all.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened
too
in
many,
this case.
Too many fires at one time.
Things burned across the street. My brother's house, the walls were still standing, and the fire department was able to get there in time to preserve, pieces of the house.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the house across the street that kind of first ignited, which was just total ashes and kind of, just almost matchstick-looking debris sticking up.
So you went there to help?
I did.
Your brother and his family. They have children, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were you guys able to do? Just pick through the remains of the house to try to find? Is that what you're...
Part of it is just helping them assess the situation. I mean, to be faced with a total loss like that was devastating, especially a house that they've put so much of their own time and energy into fixing up the rooms. And my brother does a lot of renovation work. And so this was a house that they were cultivating themselves, and kind of their forever home, really. So to lose it all was devastating. And just not even sure immediately what were the next steps to take. So helping them kind of think through that situation, give them some emotional support as we return to the house, see if there was anything salvageable. Yeah. We were able to remove a few things that then they could assess later whether they wanted to keep them or not. And, just kind of, it's amazing the community outreach that was happening in the area. I mean, there was a lot of goodwill, a lot of donation centers, a lot of people immediately trying to offer some kind of help and aid, whether that was in the form of donations. I mean, they were able to reacquire some living room furniture from a friend of a friend who had a storage unit.
This is those kind of circumstances are just extraordinary, because this is not a house that had, something got out of a fireplace and burned the house down, and it's in isolation.
Yeah.
And you can move somewhere else and maybe rebuild that particular structure again. You're talking about thousands of homes. Maybe thousands. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thousands of homes and all those people, where are they going to live?
Right.
I mean, there's not like rental property for that number of people.
Yeah.
I mean, so people, I guess just move somewhere else. Those houses that burned, let's say you had really good insurance, you'd have enough to rebuild, but the costs of wood would probably be skyrocketing. I don't even know how to
there's so many, driving variables. Into the area was really weighty.
Yeah.
Because as you're driving up the street, we were staying kind of in the central Pasadena area, driving to the north. And as you're driving up Lake Avenue, you start looking out and you see a job center here, and it's just flooded with people coming out.
Yeah.
You look over here, a parking lot, and there's a donation center over here, another donation center. Here's a tent set up with a long line of people receiving some kind of aid. Here's a line of National Guard vehicles kind of coming down the road. And then you kind of go back into the neighborhood, and you realize it is more than one person, one family affected. I mean, this is an entire community and generations of people who would have lived in this area, especially the Altadena community. Several generations of Black families that had lived in this area, especially, who had acquired houses, back in the 40s and 50s and passed them down generationally, and now having to face the reality of rebuilding and things like that.
What's your brother and his family going to do now?
Well, they do plan to rebuild. They love their neighborhood. They love their neighbors. They love the park.
What are they going to do in the interim?
In the interim, they've signed a 1-year lease on another piece of property that they're staying in the Pasadena area, still in the same school district for their daughter to still go school. And so they're producer minded people, you know, kind of like jump into action immediately. So, you know, their situation may have been better than some people who were sitting waiting for a phone call from the insurance company or things like that. They weren't going to sit around and necessarily wait. So they were at an advantage from some, and they have had a better experience with their insurance provider than some of the stories.
How do you process this spiritually?
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I mean, just, you know, one of the passages that was weighing on me was in, I believe it's 1 Corinthians. It talks about the fire testing the merit of each one's works. And, you know, obviously that's
literally
of the final judgment. But, you know, you're confronted face to face with eternity in a situation like this. And you're thinking about the bigger picture of things, both in terms of your life, the community, and all of those things. So I couldn't help but be thinking along some of those terms.
Yeah. Most people were able to get, a vast majority of people were able to get out and
get away and
to heed the warnings. So loss of life was at a minimum.
Right.
Losing one person is tragic, but in the Palisades, and then you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people affected and only a few people, you know, 20.
It's amazing that the loss of life was as small as it was, considering how quickly the fires moved and totally
so unpredictable
they were. Yeah, exactly.
Right. I just wonder, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, but I just wonder how you're going to be able to rebuild in an area where this could happen again next year.
Well, the Pasadena area specifically has never really been a wildfire threat.
Okay, that area has not. That's part of
what's so surprising about it is how far the fires came in, how quickly they moved in. There's other parts of the city that are a little more of a wildfire threat than Pasadena, but, you know.
All right. Well, MD Anderson, I'm thinking about the cancer treatment center
that an people upgrade. Go to.
My MD Perkins.
Yes, sir.
Do you call that a Freudian slip?
Freud
gets blamed for everything we do wrong.
Before we let him go, can I ask him a separate question? Is that all right?
I know
we kept him for a while. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about an article you wrote, and this would give an opportunity for us to point people to American Family News. But you wrote an article for AFN, and folks, you can go to AFN.net to get all kinds of great stories like this. But you wrote, you have an interest, part of your niche in terms of study and writing is on the subject of homosexuality and gender confusion. You wrote a great piece for AFN, Public Opinion on Same-Sex Marriage, because that's changed, right, since the Obergefell decision in 2015.
Yeah.
These kinds of legal decisions, people say you can't legislate morality, but you kind of can.
Right.
When laws are written or Supreme Court rulings are issued.
Yeah, you actually are legislating morality.
Yes, very literally.
And it changes people's opinion.
It does. Yeah, I mean, you know, the current public support of Americans behind same-sex marriage has grown to 69%. You know, when you want to see the grand picture of it, go back to 1988 when the first question was ever asked publicly about same-sex marriage, and there were only 12% in favor, 73% opposed. So you've completely flipped the script over these last 40 years. And there's so many things behind that. You know, if you're thinking about reasons for it, I mean, you've got the mass normalization that's happened with education, psychology, business and the arts, media depictions. You know, this gets back to the bread and butter of what AFA has been focused on for a long time, you know, dealing with pop culture, entertainment, news stories, how things are framed. It's interesting, in 2011, is when you started to see this term marriage equality jump into the mix rather than the term tolerance. A lot of the framing around same-sex marriage had been placed on tolerance, but the term marriage equality, of course, has kind of this bigger
The left
aspect.
Always wins the
it's
words.
It's great marketing.
Man. Yeah, the left always wins the words.
And 2011 was actually the year that it flipped from majority opposition to same-sex marriage to majority support same-sex marriage to where it's grown some over the years. Of course, the legal decisions, pornography proliferation really is another part of that. There's a study that's been done on that that says porn use is a very significant predictor of support of same-sex marriage.
And it doesn't have to be just support for homosexual pornography.
Right.
It's just when even heterosexuals begin to degrade their own sexuality, they become more accepting.
Exactly. And then there's just, you know, the uncertain and unclear witness sometimes of the church to not always speak clearly on these issues or as definitively as you would want. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons. Obviously, any sociological issue is going to have a complex number of factors leading into it.
Very good point. By the way, where is this article available?
This is on American Family News, AFA.net. Chris, do you have?
I do, and I have shared it for him on our Today's Issues Facebook page.
Great. So, folks, if you go to our Facebook page, Today's Issues, you will see a link to this story. It's so well done. We're going to let you go, but and maybe we'll have you back to discuss the impact of the homosexual, the LGBTQ movement on our young people, because that's really driving the acceptance and embrace of not just like tolerance, like you're saying, but full-throated support for this movement is so strong amongst our young people.
And it puts a lot of challenges for the future.
Is that probably because of...
Let's go ahead and continue with this conversation because I think it's important. What did you just say that...
Well, your article, why don't you go ahead and address that a lot of the change is being driven by the opinions of young people. And is this a product only of education?
Yeah, but where are the young people getting their opinion?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, if it's coming from schools or if it's also coming from
pop culture.
I think it's the mix of all of those things. I mean, you have... now a generation that's grown up only knowing gay marriage as kind of normal and accepted in society. And so even the thought of removing that or rethinking that is you know, it sounds unkind. It sounds, you know, intolerant and all of these kinds of words that get thrown around. So, yeah, I mean, the opinion that's been settled on this is – yeah, there's indoctrination that's happening. There's normalization that's happening. There's the pop cultural acceptance and the way that this is.
Is the trans thing gone too far, though?
Well, it was certainly
even for
has
the,
gone
for
too
the,
far.
Even for the people who would otherwise say I accept LGBT.
There's the LGBT moniker, as much as it is together politically, there's so much infighting between every aspect, every letter in that.
A lot of the LGs are going, I ain't a part of T.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're
I
not
mean,
in,
there's gays against
they're not
groomers
being inclusive.
And things like that that are...
I'm ready to vote the T out.
I got you, Chris. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I find fascinating, disturbing, but still fascinating as you're just observing this, is that for years, and this is across cultures, the percentage of any particular culture that identified as homosexual, as what we call LGBTQ, was 2.4%. It was usually under 3.
Right.
And that included a lot of kind of the bisexuals, that number in it. But in your article, you said for Gen Z, those born between 1997 and 2012, more than 22% of Gen Z identify as LGBTQ.
Right.
That's extraordinary.
That's not true.
Well,
I'm not saying that they don't identify. I'm not denying the stats you're citing. I'm saying that means it's trendy. It's cool.
There is a lot of social.
I'm going to get applauded at school if I say I'm trans.
Mm-hmm. Now
that's what it is.
Another thing you would even acknowledge too is that it's not just saying that I'm internally this way. It's also a rethinking of what does it mean? What is sexual attraction? What is, you know, because even the idea of sexual orientation is not just built around sexual attraction. It's also based around romantic attraction, friendships, and these kinds of things go into that definition. So a young person thinking like, I don't really connect with people of my own sex, or I don't connect with the other sex so much, so maybe I am gay, or maybe I am bisexual at least.
Sexually fluid.
Right. And so kind of the long-term identification there is not something that anyone is really even tracking. You know, so how many of these 22% of Gen Zers will continue to identify as LGBT, you know, later into life?
But nobody. 10 years from now, you come back and do that survey, that's going to be cut way down, like half or under, because it, like I was saying, I think this is, this can't be human nature, because over time, 2.5% basically has been the homosexual.
Right.
Yeah.
Lesbian number.
And we've been told it was 10% forever. Yeah.
And that was, and
it's
was
never been 10%.
And that was Malarkey. Because of Kinsey's study.
Yeah, it's because
anyway, there's a whole thing on the 10% lie.
Yeah.
Don't leave me 30 seconds, okay?
Okay. You know, but I was just going to say just really quickly, the reason I think this is important, and I don't disagree, Tim, there's a lot of young people who just, it is cool. Okay. That's the way they think of it. But they do vote. And if they grow up thinking that, okay.
No, go.
No.
Hey, we're going to come back after the news, and we got Stephen McDowell joining us. We're going to say we're going to bid adieu to MD, but you can come back and comment on the topic.
Sure. That's what I'll do.
Okay.
Are you done, Ed?
That's the music. I'm done.
Okay.
I'll give you credit, though, Dad. It was wise. You looked at the clock and was like, no, this is a good conversation.
Yeah.
Let's give Dad a hand. Good call, Dad.
Good call, Dad.
I can't take all the credit.
And the article is linked on our Facebook page.
Go to our Today's Issues Facebook.
Folks, you need to read it.
I mean, I can take most of the credit, but I can't take all the credit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But
you're humble.
I don't seem like a credit hog.
Right.
Here.
Credit hog.
Okay. We'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues.
Thanks,
right here.
MD.
Thank you.
On the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.